In my recently published book, Play to Potential, published by Penguin, I talk about the framework Flavor, where we can all lead a multidimensional life. And in that context, I've profiled six different people who I believe are striving to play to their full potential and leading a flavorful life. This conversation is with one of them, Soma Biswas Vajpayee. I've known Soma for more than 27 years. She and her husband Bhavtosh were both classmates in IIM Ahmedabad. I must confess, I did not know her very well then. But over the years, I've become a big fan of how she has adapted and thrived as they've moved different locations because of Bhavtosh's career. Very often, I hear people use the word trailing spouse to describe when they move, when the husband has to move to a different location. But Soma has shown how to thrive despite all these constraints. If I have to capture her approach to life in a phrase, it would be, if life throws a lemon at you, try and make a mojito out of it. In our conversation, Soma talks about how she's conquered some of the demons from her childhood, has gone on an inner journey to discover what she truly wants, and over time, she's found her calling and she now operates at the intersection of passion and purpose, where she's an arts-based therapist in New York. Without further ado, let's dive into the conversation with Soma, and I hope you walk away as inspired as I am. Soma, thanks so much for making the time to have this conversation with us. I know we go back 27 years now. I think we have the Silver Jubilee reunion coming up in December, and it's lovely to reconnect in this context. I think for the purpose of the listeners, maybe a good place to start, Soma, is just to talk a little bit about where you are, what you do, a little bit of context of your current situation, and then of course we can sort of take it from there.
Sure. And DJ, listen, this is my pleasure. And I think it's also a you know, wonderful opportunity for me to like kind of at this juncture, you know, reaching 50, kind of reassessing my life through your flavorful questions. Sure. So yeah, it's my pleasure as well. To give you a sense of where I am at now, I am in New York. I'm living in New York with my family, three kids, my husband. I have one who's going to college in Purdue in second year and another in 11th grade. And my daughter, so two boys, older boys, and my daughter is in seventh grade. So that's my family. Bhavtosh works at Oppenheimer, now called Invesco, and he is on the fund management side. So we have been living in New York for about 5 years now. And in the last 3 years, I have kind of, it's my second innings in my career, where I have done a master's in art therapy and at NYU. New York University. I've got my license to work as a mental health professional in New York. I work at two places now. One is I'm a child therapist at Scarsdale Edgemont Family Counseling Services, which is a local family council practice here in the town I live in. So I'm kind of a part of the community in service of children needing mental health support. And I'm also a weekend creative art therapist at a hospital, local hospital, which caters to, I'm in the inpatient psychiatric unit. And I do groups for people with deeper psychosis issues, schizophrenia, substance use, schizoaffective, and kind of more chronic psychosis that they may. So that's where I am at right now.
Wow, it's sort of if I sort of rewind 27 years for a grad coming out of IMA. And to say one would be doing this, it's a fascinating journey. I think before we get here, Soma, I find it helpful to rewind the clock. I feel, we are like an iceberg, right? We are accumulation of all our life experiences, starting from our childhood. I'd love to know if you were to rewind the clock and think about the first 15, 20 years, Can you talk a little bit about how you were shaped by the context you grew up in, and how that defined your operating system, if you will? I mean, that was sort of, in a way, one piece I want to explore, but also maybe subsequently we could talk a little bit about some of the choices you might have made. But let's start with childhood.
I like the operating system. I think now that I understand a bit more about, the theories and, the neurological impact of what really growing up initial years, how it helps in the brain development, the regulation, and finally, how you react to things. I feel like this is the most crucial part in our lives, really, DJ. So I think it's a good part to start. And also, I think for me particularly, this has been the most difficult part of my life, unfortunately. Though I think I have worked over it, all these years. So it's got a little easier to talk about it. So I grew up with parents. My dad is he's retired now, but he was a doctor at he was a gynecologist in Steel Authority of India in a small sale township called Durgapur. And my mother is a homemaker. Much to our I would say discomfort, they had a very disgruntled and unhappy marriage. To the point that it was violent, and a lot of physical and verbal abuse. And that was a way of life. But I'm grateful. I think I had a lot of multiple protective factors that helped me kind of go through that. I had a best friend's home where I practically lived. I had wonderful teachers who actually motivated me to study, and I had an art teacher who kind of got me into, I wouldn't say my search of creativity, but more into like the rigor of art. I think there was because of the innocence of growing in the child, kind of growing up in a small town, knowing the people, I feel like I had a village that I could back on. This is all looking back, not while I was growing up, because I was pretty determined about my need to leave home behind. So at 15, I left, the comfort of a, I can't say a safe home, but a home, and I went into new pastures. I went to Pune to study, from 11th grade, and I look back and I see I was all of Vibhu's age, my middle son's age, when I left home. And so you can imagine for a middle class young girl to leave home and be, it was a whole world of learning to be, independent at a different level, learning to navigate friends and teachers and like your own, how do you keep yourself like focused when you have so much of distraction. So I think that was a whole new learning, which again must have kind of helped me come of age at that time. So I stayed in Pune for a really long time, about 6 years. I did my first year even in Pumba, where I got the chance to reappear for IIMA, like to the CAT, and then I come into IIMA, and that's where. So yeah, I think yes, I think seeing my mother struggle with her relationship and marriage and being financially independent, that was one of my core motivations to gain my financial independence. So forget my, anybody in my family telling me to do anything with art. It was, I wouldn't allow myself the dalliance, to follow what my passion, even if it was art. I was very focused on, kind of making money. So MBA was the way, and my dream job to get into, Citibank. So I feel the creative aspiration really didn't start there, even though that's something that I always did. So it was only a decade that I really, decade of working as a professional in the banking space, you know, and having my own family, you know, I got into life change. So.
Of course, of course. And did you, out of curiosity, do you have a sibling, Shoma?
I do have a sibling, and I think I feel like there's a guilt that I hold for leaving home, because she had to endure. She's 4 years younger to me, so I feel like she endured being in the home. And that was the time when I left, my parents also separated. They lived separately. So kind of, I felt like she endured. I was like very happy to kind of leave home, but I left her behind. So I think that's a part that I had to work out with her. And I feel like we found our separate, unique journey to heal from within. I don't think so. We supported each other. And like, you know, the you know, to heal all that scar of the mind and heart, like, I think that takes a lot of time. And I do this as a profession, but I feel like it kind of borrows from my own life and my own learning. You can't really get into this profession without having. So I feel like, you know, gratitude for what has happened rather than that victim that I was when it was happening. So yeah, but it has threatened my, you know, I think the definition of, you know, defining it could have defined me, or, you know, like my self-worth. I mean, there were times it was the lowest time. So I think you kind of work through it. It could have gone both ways. For me, I can, again, look at 30,000 feet above and say, I made this happen. But, you know, that's why I said you need the protective layers. You kind of, whatever life throws, whatever coping skills, I kind of put it in my toolbox. And they still...
It's interesting. You, we'll probably talk more about it as the conversation progresses. You know, you had a passion for art even at that stage, but one didn't have the, if I may say, the luxury. I think, given your childhood, I guess the need for financial independence was even more pronounced. So,
But art has always, you know, because you point to art, it has always, even though it wasn't my avenue for like financial gains, I think it was always my sanctuary of healing, because I think that realm of colors and forms, the creative process, you know, the language of self-expression, that's where my catharsis, my balm was. So I feel like what I did for myself, again, I think it connects to what I do with others.
Fascinating.
And, you know, I think it's the learning process over all these, I think, I don't know, 45 years that that got me to this point. I didn't drop art. I might not have done it as prolifically as I do now, but I never dropped it.
Well, that's a great point, Shoma. I think, sometimes just staying in touch with something and it can sort of blossom much later, right? But just sort of not losing touch with something, there's just so much value in it. Yeah. I think I'd love to sort of explore the different domains of your life as things stand and along the way. But for the purpose of listeners, it might just be helpful to get a sense of some of the key choices you might have made in your journey, right? Let's say childhood, now you're an IMA, that's where we met. Can you talk a little bit of, let's say, IMA to now, if you just sort of look at it from a distance, what would you say might be some of the key personal and professional choices you might have made along the way?
I think there were many, but I think I'm just trying to kind of to the bucket of, you know, meeting my partner, life partner at that point in IMA. So it kind of, the story starts right there. We married quite early, a year after, you know, graduating. It was more a financial decision, I would say, being in Bombay, to have like, you know, pay for one rent rather than two. So I think we started our life together in Mumbai, and you know, we were very focused on our I think our professional life at that beginning. It was, I think there were two ways. I remember we would live in the same house and, you know, still not meet each other because he had such long hours and, you know, I was exhausted. So, you know, it was just that. But it was very focused on professional life. However, I think as in another, you know, 4 years, we kind of decided to, and I think the traditional route, you know, we thought started thinking about children. And that's when I think life took a different turn and the focus kind of changed. As a young mother, you know, I think I still worked with two of my boys born, they're about, you know, 3 years apart. I continued working, but it was a struggle. I think getting help from home, suddenly, like from being an independent woman, you're like you're managing different things, and you know, you have a certain idea that you have to, you know, run your home. You have a certain idea of how you're, you know, you want to take care of your children, and you want to be doing. I think that is just, I think this concept and the pressure that women put on it just is the toughest. To me, when I look back, that was the toughest period as being a young mother, and you know, the family telling you that, you know, you know, it's interesting that when family told me that, you know, I was the one who's going to make a difference to all the children, I should be making the sacrifice, I was resentful. But it makes sense. And slowly, I think what helped me kind of with that in an easier fashion make that transition is when Bhavtosh got an opportunity to move to Hong Kong with a larger role in the same organization, CLSA. So I think that was easier because for me, it was like, okay, you know, I will see how, let's, I think that helped us restart with young family in a new place. I at that point I was hopeful that I'll get another job, but the way it panned out in Hong Kong was that, you know, language is a big barrier. I tried. So it gave me that clean start
Interesting.
to explore different avenues. And that's when I would say found my love again. I started painting as a way of that managing my transition in new place, new way of living, and it gave me that space. So somehow I didn't mean to do it, but I was outdoor a lot. I was hiking a lot. I was outdoor a lot, and I would bring that into my art.
Fascinating.
And I was painting a lot, and I also started my coaching career then. So I was able, it was intertwined, and I was almost coaching myself to let go of my fear of starting my, you know, even, you know, kind of, it was like coming out of the closet saying, I am an artist. I couldn't even say that. You know, so if I'm an artist, what do? I exhibit. Really? Like, you know, is somebody out there, you know, will want to hang my paintings, pay for it, you know, like with galleries will it take? So, you know, going through that, I think coaching was my tool then to kind of explore the, you know, the, like you say, the part of my life, like my love into the next phase, launching me into the next phase. So it happened kind of combined.
And you got
The
certified,
boys
just to understand. So you got certified as a coach, and you started coaching as a as sort of a
is, yes,
as a
so I
professional
my
endeavor.
niche was working, yes, working. I enjoyed working with women, so mentoring, you know, women was, that was my piece. So I enjoyed that piece, and I think that was bringing, I think it was also, I think that was the piece that I struggled with most, being able to, you know, reach my potential and my self-limiting beliefs. And I said, yes, you know, you don't have to do it everything, you do what you do best, and kind of to me that felt like logical. So it was growing myself parallelly as I help others grow or reach their potential. That was for me, you know, the way it worked out. And more transitions came. So we went back to Bombay again, with this time a third child. and you know the challenges became even more. But I think because I had started my coaching career and my art career in a way where I had my first exhibition in Hong Kong, I feel like I had like more, you know, kind of trajectory. So I was like, I am determined to continue my art. And I think even Bhavtosh was able to sense, wow, like she can paint. So for the first time when we moved in, I was able to build in a space for my art studio. It was a
Lovely.
Small place, but you know, I had a space there where I could kind of go in. I remember whether Nikita was well, unwell, I would, you know, take her in my, you know, I would pick her up and I would paint if that was the day, it was my painting day. So I feel like, you know, I was very determined with no matter what to continue my art. And I think coaching was difficult. Again, the context had changed. And I think everywhere you build, you know, you have to, I think, DJ, you understand that, right? Because every place you have to kind of grow yourself, you have to prove yourself. And then when you move, you're like, you've lost all of that. So I was in that process. And this time something beautiful happened is that I met with two young gentlemen who wanted to start something in education, because I was very interested. Like I had been connected through my past experience with, you know, Akanksha Teach for India, and through that network, I got to meet my partner who's working on the education front. So that's where it was a separate journey that started on exploring the social enterprise in my life, where, you know, we not only did, you know, we invest, but I invested a whole lot of my time and my energy into Zaya, which basically it was a for-profit social enterprise where we wanted to improve the education platform that is, you know, provided to public schools and, you know, the low-cost private schools, where we said, you know, you have the teachers who may not have the training, but we'll give the tools, you know, online, you know, like tools which could be provided to you, where you just go and implement the content. And so I think it was fascinating. And I think I think it was a bit ahead of its time, if it was during COVID, or I think it was just.
It sounds a bit like what our friend Sumit Mehta does, right?
Senti? Yes, he did meet Sumit Mehta. So I did meet Sumit Mehta, you know, at a very early stage. You can almost imagine this was, I'm talking about it in 2012, 20, you know, so it's like really long time ago, more than 10 years ago. So yes, so it was a difficult, a very different, but a very fulfilling journey of, you know, looking at something that I had never done before. So I think what the piece I took away from it is that even though it was financially, it may not have been fulfilling, but it gave me an immense energy and that idea that I can work on something new, which I may not have done before. So kind of that strength. So yeah, Zaya also, you know, kind of, I moved then next to New York, and kind of Zaya continued for a little while, but,
there
missed
that. There was a Singapore in the middle, right?
No, there was a Hong Kong again in the middle.
Correct. So when Bhavtosh moved to Sanford, right?
Yes. So Bernstein happened, and so we were in Hong Kong for another 4 years.
Yes.
So that was again me going back to my art and a bit, you know, to my, you know, coaching. I continued to, you know, do work with Zaya, so I would travel back to Mumbai, but it was getting harder to, you know, to work out of Hong Kong. So, so I think that the transitions kind of gave me a chance to, I think, restart, but at the same time, it was hard because I had to keep peddling, you know, finding that network of friends, to support myself and the children. And kind of that was itself a whole load of work, right? Because every time, you know, Bhavtosh would plug in into the same workplace. So it was pretty comfortable or easier for him. But it was me and the kids who had to kind of find our, you know, who are the children they're going to hang out with, you know, who are the friends that we're going to be live, where are we going to live, how are we going to make our current living comfortable, happy, you know. And so that task was on me, because you are the person who's more outgoing, or you're the person who's at home. So that was the part. And I don't think so I did it with sorry, I didn't do it with resentment, but I think it was something that I had to, you know, take on. And I guess looking back, that just helped me kind of connect with people from, you know, like different, you know, different cultures and understanding nuances. So, you know, living in it kind of groomed me to live to adopt another home where I wasn't out of my comfort zone. So yeah, I think something good came out of it, because I'm not somebody who would like to be isolated. I traveled a lot, by the way. That was one phase. I traveled a lot by myself. That's something that my kids had support at home. Bhavtosh was, there was one year where he did not have a job. So, you know, the option was I asked him if he wanted to travel. He was like, no, you travel. So I was like, okay. So I did a lot of traveling in Asia, Vietnam, Cambodia. I went to Europe. So I met, you know, like my family who was, you know, so I kind of used that opportunity to pour it back into my art again. So I had a few more exhibitions in Hong Kong. So kind of it worked out in a way.
Of course. I think you make it sound easy, Shoma, but I think clearly when I take away two, three strands, right? One is, I think having art as a, maybe if I may say, harness when you're climbing, you know, whenever you slip, you've got a harness that holds you and ensures that you don't slip. I think that's, and I think it sort of played different roles, maybe in your childhood to your working life, to when you moved to Hong Kong, to New York. So in a way, it's fascinating how that's been a consistent thread and it's taken different shapes. Yeah. Clearly, there's an element of making a difference beyond your family and beyond your work, the Zaya piece. Clearly, there's an element of reskilling and reinvention, let's say, whether it was the coaching or even the current. Do you want to talk a little bit about the coursework you had to do to get to the current situation you're in?
Yes. So I think it's interesting that, you know, there was a, I feel like I've always believed in planning. I know that life just kept throwing in a lot of, you know, like I would say uncertainties and a lot of googlies at us. However, I think what happened was, the reason I'm talking about planning is that since I was not working in a professional kind of structured life, I think it became much more important. So I started planning my life across like 5-6 segments. And I think since I have all of those, DJ, and, you know, all my planning across different segments, that I would look at them and, you know, like, what do I want to do this year? And I see that since 2014, I have a trend of that. And I remember 2019, you know, I had written somewhere that I had been exposed to art coaching. And I said, you know, if I can... Can now that I have come to a crossroad when I moved to New York, like, do I go back to my MBA? Do I go back to my social enterprise? Or do I take my art and, you know, kind of coaching somewhere? And I got to, you know, kind of, I read the, you know, about art therapy. And basically, I think what I thought it was a lot of art, what I really saw is that it is psychotherapy. So basically, the whole coursework is training you with the theories and with, you know, the knowledge of making you a counselor. So it has the skills, you know, all the knowledge, and also the art was, you know, a part of in the toolbox. And all the internships were throwing you into different, either with, you know, it's like different segments, age segments. So I've worked with, you know, children in New York schools. I have worked with elderly in Italy with Alzheimer's. That was my summer internship. I've worked with, you know, people with medical disorders like lupus and multiple sclerosis, Parkinson's disease, and with substance use. So it gave me like this whole flavor of, I was like, wow, this is like intense. So as I was going slowly into it, I was also realizing as it scaffolded that what art could do and where it could, you know, take me. So the coursework was all about, you know, kind of preparing the groundwork for it. So I think the hardest was writing a thesis about one of my clients and connecting each dot. It was to me the hardest part, writing a thesis, but at the same time, you know, kind of connecting all the dots in, you know, what really was making sense in the so I don't know, DJ, if that's what you wanted to hear, but
no,
I think it was pretty intense, you know, a 60 credit course at this with holding on to the, you know, your family, your social life, you've made a transition into a whole way of living in the West. You know, your health has dropped, you have to drive everywhere. You're like an Uber driver for your children. I think what has, I have to, you know, talk about the transition that Bhavtosh was making. I think he became my support. And I think there was a whole transition that was happening for Bhavtosh and the children as well. So I
say more about that. I think maybe if I had to further add, I noticed that, you know, if I may say, women who probably play the enabling role in families, where maybe the primary, if I may say, the commercial engine is the spouse. I noticed that often, you know, the spouse need, let's say in this case, you, one has to play a little bit of a proactive role in seeking support. Otherwise, it's very easy to sort of be consumed by the circumstances and sort of be relegated to a, if I may say, a sort of a back-end role, right? So it's sort of I noticed that in situations where women in enabling role are thriving, like yourself, if I may, there's an element of almost like negotiation seems like a very clinical or a very cold word. It's a series of conversations. It sometimes doesn't happen automatically. I wonder what's your experience on that front.
I think you're so right on that. And I feel like it's almost like one aspect negotiation, the other aspect, you know, your own letting go of how you think it's a perfect way of doing things. I think I saw parts of it as, and again, it's a process. I feel like the years when I traveled a lot, you know, I think Bhavtosh said, like, how difficult can it be? Like, you know, I have help at home and, you know, the boys have a routine. And I think that's the first time he realized that he was so empathic when I was not there, as to what it really takes, even with help, to keep it together. So I think for me, it was like when I travel, I am so much in the present. I'm not making each call. Have the kids at 8? Have they gone? Or like, have they attended? So I am absolutely detached. And that has taken some time, because if I did give a call and said, you know, I said, why did you give pizza or why did you make fries? It's like I kept them alive. So that was something that I had getting used to, that it was okay. You know, so said, if you want it, you know, my way, you know, then you have to let it be, or you come and do it. So I think Bhavtosh was very, very clear about making it, you know, for me, you know, that if he wants it to be happening in a certain way, then I need to let go of. So I think training me. I was, you know, like the situation was training him. And when we came to the US, I think there was, because as you already know, DJ, you know, work, living here is so different from, you know, being in Asia. And I think we were pretty spoiled. I think, but one thing that we had fundamentally decided was that we're not going to be, we don't have a lot of like expectations that, you know, it's going to be exactly the same as we had, but we knew that we needed help and we needed our cooking situation to be taken care of. And I think you cannot be good at everything. I think that you have, a friend of mine says this all the time, you have to suck at something. And for me, I had decided early on, I have to give up on the ability to make like 4 meals a day for my children on the table. So I put it together, but that's something that I get help on. So I did
Understood.
that even in the US. So that kind of helped me in having basic help. And then on top of it, kind of keep everything running together smoothly. And Bhavtosh was absolutely on board with it. You know, he kind of, we continue to be able to, you know, while I'm moving into this new life where I am not there in the evenings because I work with children. I'm not there in the evenings when the kids come back from school because I'm working with children and I work on a weekend. So it's a very intense, you know, role where we are both supporting each other. The days when he has to go for work, I'm, you know, at home. So it's like it's like a great partnership that we are building, and that's the only way I feel like it can work.
Lovely,
And
lovely.
constant negotiation. It's not as cool as it sound. It's there
Of
are times
course, of course, of course.
we do have the ball has dropped.
I don't know. I think completely. I think, but the point is at least taking a stab at having the conversation, right? Have the conversation and see where it goes, right? It may not be
And it's
clean.
a
It
training,
is
so it's a
messy.
process.
It's a process, and it's a process of readjustment, managing expectations, setting boundaries. I think the one piece I'm curious about, Shoma, is just you know, you started out when you spoke about your early years. You spoke about the need for commercial independence, IMA, Citibank. Then kids happened. Then transitions happened. Then art. Talk to me about maybe the how your aspirations have evolved over time. And when I say aspirations, I'm not just talking about aspirations from a, if I may say, just from a work or a professional lens, but just as a human being. Can you just talk a little bit about how that's sort of taken shape over time?
I'm just thinking about it. How the aspiration has moved on. Is there anything that you feel like, is there anything that you have observed as over the years that, you know, people's aspirations, you know, kind of change or evolve? I'm feeling.
Let me talk about myself, right? Let's make it specific. See, I think when we were on campus initial years, it was a little bit about, you know, however narrow it might sound, there was a certain academic orientation to aspiration. It would be to say, I want to study in these kinds of places, I want to get these kinds of grades. Initial years in consulting, whether I would say KPMG, McKinsey, or even Egon Zehnder, I would say, I want to become a partner, I want to do this. You know, there's an element of that being the primary definition. I would say cut to today, I think there's an element of, I think what I realize I derive energy from is a sense of balance and a sense of harmony across the different elements of life. So to me, you know, that's to me is personally feels more important than, let's say, building a large organization. Sometimes when people talk about impact or impact at scale, I see a certain sense of restlessness and a certain sense of desire. Here, you know, we have this huge problem, and I see. And I think it's healthy energy, right? That people are pouring into making a difference. In my case, I feel my aspiration is to be a little more balanced, be happy, just ensure that I'm a decent husband, you know, father, son, get good at what I do. I think excellence is another thing that sort of I aspire to, getting really good at what I do. So I would say that's the shape of my aspiration. I would say the word
I
that.
hear now. Yeah, I think you've put it so beautifully. I was feeling a little you know, stumped at what really, because I feel like you know, I feel like when it was, you know, at IMA, I felt like I was like bursting forth with aspiration, you know, like, you know, in terms of the careers, you know, you want to kind of go climb the ladder. You know, you want different roles, and you know, like every 2 years, you wanted, I would say you would want your promotion, you know, and you were worried about like, you know, am I doing well to kind of get the next role? And so I think the initial few years, I think a lot of focus and energy was in success in those terms, you know, like the job roles that you got, the promotion that you got, the money that you made, you know. So I think that was more of it was very financially, and yeah, it was driven even that way. I think the later years, I felt like it was more when we started transitioning, and I was no longer in a professional role. I think for me, it was how do I keep myself, you know, kind of relevant, you know, kind of me piece when I was drowned in, you know, the transitions of the countries, finding home, finding, you know, kind of getting the kids ready for school, or you know, kind of taking them, you know, here, just keeping them active
Of
and
course.
you know, engaged, and you know, like, you know, teaching them, being for, you know, being, you know, the available mother. So all of that, I think, it was something that was I was primarily a mother for most years. And everything else revolved around, you know, whatever little time I would get when they were in school was, you know, kind of what do I, you know, like, how do I find? So I was always, I think, in the dynamics of raising children and, you know, living in a different country, you know, you have to kind of, you have to, you know, keep in this, you know, new environment. You keep looking at challenge. Every day is a challenge. So I
Course.
think there was no, I don't think so. I found a lot of continuity. I tried different things. And so I think I enjoyed, I reveled in the novelty of those things. For me, I would say for me personally, what was the, there was a lot that focus that went into the health part of it as a an, and my own art and spirituality kind of kicked in more as to how do I, you know, keep myself grounded. So much was happening, you know, in the
And I loved, if I may come in, I loved what you said somewhere a few minutes back, right? That there wasn't resentment. You know, I find that powerful because in a way, maybe you could argue a lot of situations, a lot of transitions happened, which was probably a lot more disruptive to you and the kids than maybe it was for Bhavtosh, because in a way he was either moving within the same organization or there was a sort of a clear business case for his move. But I think not being resentful and sort of having a sense of agency even amidst this is not is not natural, right? It takes work to get there.
No, I think DJ, I don't think so. I can give myself credit for so much of benign, you know, I would say forgiveness. I can't, because I think there have been times when I would be very resentful, but I would feel like, you know, my career didn't go anywhere. Like I'm the one stuck, and you know, all those kind of thoughts. Or if I would meet, you know, batchmates, or you know, especially, you know, women who are doing very well in their career and they feel settled, it would definitely hurt me. So I really cannot kind of say that was absolutely the, you know, the magnanimity that I approach that I took. So I think it was a
Fair.
process.
Nani, I respect the candor, right, Shoma? And I think maybe just a pause here. Given your experiences with balancing career, let's say geographical moves and kids, any, you know, if you were to talk to a woman coming out of IMA today, any headline pieces of thought you want to equip her with as she sort of gets into the world of work?
I think, you know, I feel like when you come out of IMA, I think you have more, I think I'm speaking for myself again. I think it's very unidirectional, the aspiration, as you have rightly pointed out. It's like, how do I make, you know, how do I make myself, establish myself in the financial and in terms of like the career growth and all of that. I think over life, when I look back, DJ, do I regret any of that? I don't think so. But I feel like I feel gratitude every moment while I'm saying this, because I feel like each part of that was an experience that kind of combined and added and kind of flowed into where I am right now. But I think keeping an eye on, I think, self-care and growth and kind of, like I said, even though I didn't have a job, kind of keeping an eye on different aspects, whether, like I said, planning about every year, it was like my marker, I don't know why it is a year, but it's just the
And this
beginning of
is
the year.
something
It
you
would
do at the beginning of the year, as sort of the New Year resolution, as we say.
yes, I'm one of those who will
Wow.
every year, like since I think I have a book that I write every year since 2014. I have each planning of each year
Fascinating.
across different aspects that I feel like that is something that has helped me, whether it's whatever I felt it was my professional like focus is my children and spouse. Art has always kind of, like the friends and family and, health and spiritual travel, all of that are different balls that I was just saying, like the same balls have to be, caught in the air. So I feel like suddenly the life is no longer just unidimensional. You are growing in different aspects. So I felt like that growth helped me kind of propel forward with no matter what the challenges are, because whether you like it or not, I feel like I could not have dropped the children or the spouse or the home, or the travel, any of those balls but I couldn't have them up in the air at all times. But I think the child and the spouse and your home, that it becomes your fundamental, I would say,
The glass balls, right? The glass balls
yes,
that you can't
the
drop.
glass ball. They are the glass ball. So wo kabhi, that can't be dropped ever. So I think everything else you kind of, as you get efficient with it, or your children grow up, they don't need you physically as much more because you're not physically exhausted running around with them, but you have to be emotionally available when you want to come and talk. So I think the you as a parent, you have to be changing. So the other thing is that if you don't grow yourself spiritually and you're not increasing your awareness, life's complexity does not, continue to reduce.
And can you
No
talk a bit
matter.
more? You mentioned spirituality two, three times. What does spiritual growth mean to you? Can you talk a little bit about how you approach that?
So I think for me, it means spending time with yourself. Like I have said, that has increased a lot. I do meditate, every day, setting an intention in the morning if I can, having an afternoon meditation and before sleep. I feel like it has helped kind of, and it's some days it's possible, some days it's not, but I feel like the over the last, I would say, 20 plus years, that has been another harness, as you put it. It has been my harness to kind of, kind of think about. And I think the when they say that, the resources are inside you, and you kind of have to, it's a combination. The resources are inside you, and then it says, this is something that you work on, or this is, I think it kind of works. The inside outside combination has helped me work.
Lovely. And you briefly touched upon friends and family, right? I think clearly we've spoken about family enough. Can you talk a little bit about, let's say, just relationships, right? Whether it's in the context of exploring opportunities or whether it's just in the context of revitalizing oneself. Can you talk a little bit about how you sort of prioritize that, or how you've sort of dealt with that as life has unfolded?
DJ, I was just wondering that as I was going through this long thread of conversation, I missed the piece where what is aspiration now? So
Sure.
is,
Well,
if I could
let's
add
talk about that, of course.
so I think that since you made me think about this whole aspiration, I it's actually quite a significant piece for me. I feel like for me, the aspiration now has become to really look at life in a more broad-based, and like you said, the balance. And I think I am in the picture a little more than I was. Like for me, being, kind of healthy, mentally grounded, and kind of in that peaceful zone has really significantly changed. And that kind of supports, how my family is. And I feel like I'm also aspiration of growing myself, not just in that space, is also being able to have the space as a conduit to hold more discomfort, pain, not just myself, for my family and friends, but also for my clients. So I feel like that it's almost like, how am I growing myself as a vessel, my aspiration to grow myself as a vessel for this whole, as a catalyst and as a campaigner. I think that's how I have seen myself in the last few years.
A
So I
beautiful.
think,
It's a beautiful visual. I mean, as a painter, clearly,
yeah.
I guess you think in images. I love it.
Yes.
Just holding the space and sort of, in a way, being that, if I may, shock absorber for the
Yes.
family, for the clients, and sort of the space, creating the space for spiritual growth for you and for the client in that journey, right?
I think that that's what my connection, with whether I'm, like you said, about, connections, matter to me, whether it's the connection with my inside, connection with my children, with, so that really fires me as much. And I think there is a plaque which I have always kept in front of me since I was in my young 20s. It's been kind of the North Star. Remember we talked about DJs, like it says, to laugh often and much, to win the respect of intelligent people and the affection of children, to leave the world a bit better, to know even one life has breathed easier because you have lived, that to have succeeded. I feel like I am bringing that aspiration, still holds true, and in light. And I feel like when I look at it, I feel like I'm going towards that North Star. So aspiration is
Fascinating.
like, kind of stick to that.
Fascinating. It's sort of sometimes it's just these simple words are immensely clarifying, right? It's nothing lofty, right? It's just one life breathed easy is
Yes. And I think simplifying life, DJ, I think aspiration is now just simplifying life. So I think life is really to be lived. So I think that's what I feel like, that's where I feel much more, I would say, balance. And there are times when you
Of
get
course.
this, but kind of keeping that regular routine to kind of, whether, like I said, whether it's your spiritual practice, art, friends, that kind of, my family, that kind of keep that in the glass balls
Correct.
in
And I
the air.
think if I may build on that, Shoma, I think one is sort of not losing sight of what the glass balls are, as you said. But what I find also fascinating is, just ensuring that while you're sort of pouring, your energies into the big pieces, you're not losing sight or you're not losing touch with those small things and just sort of finding a way of just keeping nourishing it, however small it is, right? For example, art, the sense I get was sort of maybe playing the supporting role for a while when kids were front, but now in a way you've sort of kept enough in touch with it for it to reappear in a little more, if I may say, prominent role. So I think that I take that away as well, not to completely lose touch. I think there's something to be said about continuity and sort of having that alive somewhere in some corner of your heart for it to re-emerge sometime in the future.
Yeah. And that's the acceptance that everything will not happen all the time. That's just said, you have to, like, the one thing is gonna be less. But I think keeping that eye on, there's a concept, central concept in art therapy, which I really love, which is that of a thermostat in your, kind of treatment. When you get, too restricted, and I know that you love the flow aspect. When you get too restricted, how do you use the mediums to loosen you up? And when you are too dysregulated and undone, what do you bring in to ground and center you? So I feel like that duality is going to be always playing in. And as they say that, when you do your ECG, it's not meant to be like this,
It's
it's
in
like
a
your head,
range. I mean,
right?
it's in a
So
range.
it's that range that where do you keep that? You keep going up and down and being more aware of that. So I feel like the aspiration is to be more aware and kind of keep that thermostat going.
I love the
And
thermostat.
the acceptance is that it is gonna go here and there all
It
the
does
time.
fluctuate. Correct. That's
That's
not to straight line is not the objective, right? But to sort
not
of
the
keep it
objective.
within bounds,
Yeah.
reasonable bounds. I use thermostat in the context of when people ask me how many people do you work with, how do you think about effort. I just say, yeah, broadly it's a thermostat. If there's too much, when I sort of the busyness gets out of hand, I cool off and I say no to work. It's a sort of just as long as it's broadly within the band, right? I think it's sort of, but it's never a straight line. I think that point is well taken. I think we were briefly talking about relationships when you sort of went back to aspiration. Do you want to sort of touch upon that? And then maybe I wanted to explore a couple of other things.
Yeah, I think, I feel like the relationships, I have to talk about my parents to begin with, and that's a relationship that I feel like I have had to work on, because as I've gone through different phases with that, as a rebel teenager, I was really horrible in my own ways, where I have completely cut off relationships and all that. So almost like going back to rebuilding some of that. And I can't say whether they're optimal or not, but I have worked on the relationship to, kind of to let go of some of the resentment that I held. And so I think there's a whole lot of work that if I did not do it, I could not have reached at this stage in life. And so that was an important, difficult piece, but I think that's something that I worked on.
And did that, if I may, did that require seeking help, or was it sort of
Yes.
doing
I
it on your
still,
own?
to give you perspective, like when I go in therapy again, it's something that I have always used coaching even to work on my relationship, but more, I think, as the spiritual journey. But I think I want to actively use therapy to kind of go and see what really is. Sometimes, I feel like I've become a little bit more philosophical, where I believe in, the past, the reasons why it happened. So I'm kind of wanting to address some of that. So yes, work, it's a continuous work that needs to kind of to repair, and I can't even say thrive at this point in time. Yeah.
Got it. So I think you were talking about relationships. You started with parents. I was curious, as see, clearly family, we've spoken about kids, Bhavtosh, parents. I'm curious about how just you move geographies, and at least I believe that friendships and relationships are required, and I think there's enough research about the Japanese as well, right? The ones that are thriving. Finally, people say that good, healthy relationships are key, whether it's friends or family. Do you want to shine the light on how you sort of made space for that, despite the sort of the demands of life?
I feel that, DJ, I can't say enough about, building relationships. I think I feel like for both me and Bhavtosh, that's something that we both believe in. And I think it was challenging because we moved a lot. But I felt like as we kept going to different places, life gave us opportunity to meet with different people, whether, from aspects of, professional, or just friend, our kids' parents, and so different groups, my friends who I met through coaching, art, so the circles, different circles we have met, and people are constantly moving, especially because Hong Kong is that kind of a place where it's almost like a platform.
And flux.
It's a lot of flux. I feel like over the years, the way I still have my childhood friend who is my best friend. I have gone visited her. We have traveled together now. So I feel like there's a phase when you will, you know, it's tough and you may have dropped, but I have gone back seeking, you know, kind of rekindling that relationship. And some friendship, if they are deep, you know that it's you connect exactly where you have started. And even friends from, you know, my college or you know, IMA. So there are different groups. My mentor, my ex-boss, she still remains my very good friend. I've traveled with her. You know, my ex-colleagues, I stay in touch with, you know, few who really mattered and, you know, they sparked that, you know, I would say that joy. I have not let them, you know, my neighbors from Hong Kong and friends from Hong Kong. And I feel like I have traveled back to visit them, especially if it's Mumbai or Hong Kong. I have traveled back and reconnected. I feel like since I live in New York, the world travels through New York. So I feel like I get an opportunity to meet if they are professional, you know, from professional life, they are coming here for work. We make the opportunity and the time, both of us, to meet friends. If we are, you know, if they're and we are at that stage where children are coming to study in the
Yes.
US. So parents are coming here. So we don't lose that opportunity. And even during weekdays, it's been, you know, how tough it is, but we have made that opportunity to meet them. If not, I think I say we because I see both of us doing it, Bhavtosh and me. We connect, we talk over the phone. So I feel like I may not be, you know, in different time zones. Morning is the time I can touch base with friends from Hong Kong, India, you know, Singapore. So it's like that time zone. And I feel like if there are friends that I need to meet in the US, then it's like later. But I feel like at least a call and when possible to meet. I think that's something that I have connected. I have traveled to meet friends, and when I do travel, I make it a point to meet them. I think I personally get a lot of joy, a lot of I would say nourishment
Got
from
it.
these relationships. And they're also my support, you know, in terms of I would say the womanhood and the sisterhood that has helped me, especially during my, you know, young mother days when you really need it. So I kind of have I haven't forgotten that phase, and
Got it.
that's when you need a lot of support, I feel, and I've kept in touch with them.
Got it.
Yeah, I have not tried to do it alone. If
Of
there's a
course.
problem, I do seek advice and support. I have friends who range from my classmates who are, you know, young 20s to I have my really wonderful friend who helped me move to this country because she was moving to she's in her 70s. So
Wow.
you know, I have like at every stage in life I have friends who have been through that stage and what it is like. That
Lovely,
helps.
lovely. If I may, you've been through multiple transitions. If we specifically shine the light, Shoma, on just that sort of, if I may, rediscovering the flavor, right? We spoke about the various elements of flavor so far, but if you just want to sort of maybe shine the light on the first 3 to 6 months in each of these transitions, sometimes that can be the hard part, right? I think where there's just so much in flow. What have you learned about just maybe this process of rediscovery? As you transition. Of course, transition is not just geographical transition, but even change of context with kids. Let's say one child going to college and maybe soon all kids in college. I guess there are different ways of looking at transitions. But any reflections on if you once again had to talk to somebody embarking on this journey straight just coming out of college today, what would you say? What are the one or two things that you've learned through this phase of rediscovering the flavor as life has unfolded.
That's a very broad, like what's some of the key things in risk.
And it's messy, right? It's not that there's one clean. I was just curious if there's any, let me again once again maybe share, start with an example, right? When I moved to India in the context of my father's cancer treatment in 2008, it was a now when I look back at that time, I was overwhelmed, and it took me a while. I just sort of went with the flow. And then eventually we decided, he passed away in a few months, and we decided to stay back in India. But now when I, at least as I go through the journey, I realize that, I shouldn't jump into decision making too quickly. Sometimes just let the situation play out, and the answer often emerges over time. I've started believing in sometimes time being a friend in terms of just, the answer emerging rather than trying to muscle my way into an answer, if that makes sense. So that's something that I've learned through a few situations where, you just have to some, there's no substitute to slow cooking your
Yeah.
way to a, to an outcome. There's no brute force approach that could work. But I was just curious if you have any reflections on this.
For me, it's a very interesting question. It's making me think, but I feel like my fallback is what has art taught me? And I feel like through art process is what I feel like I have learned life. And for me, it's like, there's like you said, that there's an instant validation you need in the social media, and they show you, how you complete a picture with a click of a, and it's very frustrating for me. I feel like, that's not true. They don't show the messiness of the process. And I feel like the process is where you have to learn to have fun and expand yourself in staying in that process. I feel like, and that's where you have to relinquish the idea of a perfect picture. And that's something that I work with the children, and I think part of my work is letting go of that idea of what a perfect picture is. I think we live in a very judgmental, just a generation. We just have to have a lot of, I would say, we are very quick to judge and have opinions. I feel like that's something that is actually hindering the growth and the process of, discovery and the curiosity. I feel like that's what I have learned to relinquish some of that perfect picture idea. And like some of the things that have worked for me is baby steps, just stroke at a time, and painting emerges. It is not something that I had. So planning is a part of it. I will never say, because for me, that has
Of
been
course.
a central idea to go, about it. But I feel like life is becoming more and more uncertain, like as in during COVID, when I picked up the watercolors and I made my, 100 days painting, that was a way of actually dealing with my anxiety and the stress that was every day, every moment it would build. And for me, the watercolors, experimenting with watercolors every day taught me that you're kind of relinquishing control. You're kind of embracing that imperfection, of the colors that has just appeared on the paper, and you're making it a part of your plan, and I feel like that's where is the crux of growth, is that it is not in the predetermined plan, but in accepting the unplanned with, with what you're, we're planning, and happy accidents meet. So I think that is really, it's not that happens the first day. I
Of
don't think so it
course.
happens. So it's like, to me, that is what has helped, that going with planning, but, being flexible and trying and being curious as to what is being thrown at you. And I feel like that trust, I think, is, it's also now the trust in the universe is growing a bit more. So I think keep that struggle of the dance of the creation. Like, you need a little tension, they say, in the art. And you have to kind of come with certain thing that you want and something happens. That struggle is a part of the plan. It's not without, you can't do
Of
that
course.
without.
Of course.
So yeah, I think
Lovely. Oh, beautiful, Shobha. I love one brush stroke at a time and the painting emerges, right? It's beautiful. I think very, very well said. I think it's been a
And
very.
change is the only constant, really. I know it's such a cliched thing, but I feel like I look back for me, so
And
just
you,
keeping that flow.
I think that brings me to one of the things you said in one of our earlier conversations, right? This concept of flow, life keeps flowing. And you need to acknowledge that and sort of, in a way, keep, if I may say, rowing your boat amidst this flow, right? It's not a static, you might like it or not, but it's, it's not, things might appear static, but life keeps flowing. Do you want to touch upon that? Because it's such a, you mentioned it in the passing, but it stayed with me, especially as I've been thinking about this notion of finding our flavor as we go through life. I think the key element I want to shine the light on is this process of rediscovery. It's not like you found the answer and you stay with it, right? They just, life keeps evolving. So did you want to touch upon that?
I don't know why I just feel like it's the more I have gone into art, it feels like that's where the flow has, the flow in the artwork also speaks to me. I feel like it's a concept that is true to what happens even in what they say in illness. They say that the energy flow where it gets stuck is where your health breaks down. So interestingly, flow is the only way that you can thrive in. So flow for me, it's like I feel like you don't flow at the same rate or at the same place as well.
Of course.
So it's like you it's I'm trying to think about how do you present the flow in your own life. To me, the flow is what you keep looking inward and outward at the same time. It's like, what is it that makes you happy, but also what is you're in relation to the outside. So, like where you are flowing also matters. I don't know if that makes sense. When I am flowing, out of IMA versus when I'm flowing out of IMA, when I am in, like 20 somethings versus when I'm flowing in New York, almost about to be 50, it can't be the same.
Course.
So, how you blossom in that environment really has to be taken into consideration. So in this space, I feel like the only thing that really helps is the awareness and the noise outside, how you're able to dim to kind of be aware. And I'm doing this because I'm thinking of the lotus, where it's a beautiful analogy because it unfurls, where it'll unfurl anywhere, right? Even in the most water. But it's a process, because if you keep an eye on the changes of nature, you have to see that your life can't be the same. So taking stock at any point in time and going from there, I think is what helps in the flow, like being mindful of what has changed. And I feel like for me, what has helped is like keeping the five, six elements always alive, kind of checking in. And I think being kind to myself, I would have like, five, six ideas in every block, and so many times I would not, but I would, for example, in health, I would have like, a few races to run, a few, tricks to do, but I would have done a few, like, so for
It
me, it's
just
like,
it's more directional, right? It's not about taking everything,
it's,
right? It just gives you a
yes,
sense of direction, I'm hoping,
direction.
right?
So I
right?
feel like that North Star is important. It's the North Star is to kind of keep going upwards. You're not going to be like, touching every peak. I
Of
think
course.
that is not peak potential. Peak potential is like, keeping the surrounding in mind, what you're able to achieve. But the journey needs to be upward and onward. But you kind of, you have to see that you're flowering from all aspects, not just one petal opening. That's not how a
That's
flowery,
a good visualization, yeah, of full potential, right? The whole lotus blossoming and not one petal. I love that. I love that. I think if I may sort of as we conclude this conversation, Shomam, very inspiring, right? I think just all the way from the various elements, childhood, how you've sort of, if I may say, navigated through the different emerging contexts. If I were to ask you, I mean, this conversation, the series of conversations is about talking to people who've taken a stab at playing to full potential, not just sort of unidimensional potential, right? And we can discuss till the cows come home on whether we should be on that list, you should be on that list, I should be on that list, or who should be on that list. But I think let's leave it as people who are striving to lead up to sort of to blossom like a full lotus. Any concluding thoughts on what it takes to take a stab at leading a full life, given your lived experience, Shoma?
I like the word strive a lot. I feel like I, since you said it, it's kind of struck for me. And looking back, I just feel like having a North Star always helps because directionally you want to go in a certain way. I feel like assessing, I think periodically what is most important, and sometimes you will have some, and relinquishing that
Yes.
perfectionism idea that it has to be a certain way because it has worked for somebody else. I think that is a little flawed. And fourthly, I feel like support. Remember that, you have to be support to somebody else to gain the support back. So that support, whether you are supporting somebody, and then you have the confidence and the relationship to ask that support back. So creating those blocks of support.
Lovely. It's a wonderful conversation, Shoma. Lots to, I'm going to sort of, this has left me with a lot to mull over, and I'm sure hopefully the listeners that tune into this will seek inspiration and seek value with some of the things that we've discussed. But thank you so much for your time
Thank you.
and
You
for
have made
sharing.
me think so much. Like I feel like I've had a good review of my life and kind of thinking what next for me. But I think thank
And it's
you
the feeling
for
is
such a
mutual,
wonderful
Shoma. Thank you so
conversation.
much. Thank you so much.
I hope you found the conversation with Shoma purposeful. I really loved the point she makes about life being like a lotus, where multiple petals need to unfurl simultaneously for the life to be beautiful. If you have a moment, do check out her article on LinkedIn, Be Hag is Scary, Baby Steps or Not. This was something that she wrote in 2017, but is extremely relevant even today. I'll add a link to the article in the description section of the video. Shoma is one of the six people we've profiled as part of the Flavorful Life series. Do tune into the other five if this piques your curiosity. And if you want deeper insights on doing the inner work, making trade-offs, being agile as life context evolves, and rediscovering your flavor as you go through your journey, do consider picking up the book Play to Potential. The link to where you can find the book is available in the description section. I hope you'll find it useful. Thank you.